I want to begin by saying what an incredible zechus. What an incredible privilege it is to be here with all of you on this Tisha B'Av afternoon. When it comes to Tisha B'Av, there's an ancient custom that on Matzei Tisha B'Av, you take your kinos, you take your Book of Lamentations, and you bury them. An ancient custom. And the logic behind that custom is the incredible sense of optimism and hope of the Jew, that the Tisha B'Av that was just observed will be the last one. There's no need to hold on to the kinos. There's no need to hold on to the eicha. There's no need to hold on to all the difficult and tragic writings from the prophets and from the rabbis, because this year must have been the last one. And so whenever I prepare for Tisha B'Av, I'm usually not a procrastinator. Usually I try to do things in a timely fashion, with one exception. And that's my preparation for Tisha B'Av. Much to the chagrin of the office staff at my shul, I can't bring myself to do the schedule. I can't bring myself to give them the kinos packet to be made copies for, because I feel like acting on those things too early is a resignation, is giving in, is yielding to the fact that of course there will be another Tisha B'Av. And here we are again on a Tisha B'Av afternoon. Another Tisha B'Av. And I'm sure I, like many of you, thought that for sure last year was the last year. Mashiach has to be here already. Geula has to come already. Redemption has to come already. It's been over 2,000 years. Last year for sure was the last year. But we're here again. But I will tell you that there's one part of my Tisha B'Av that I do not delay in preparing, and one part of my Tisha B'Av which gives me incredible chizuk, and that's this year. To see so many, Baruch Hashem, hundreds of women come out on a Tisha B'Av afternoon when it looked like the heavens are about to open, on a day that's already been long and tiring and emotionally grueling for so many of us, I can only imagine the incredible zechus, the incredible merit that this creates for Klal Yisrael. And that the Ribbono Shel Olam looks down and he sees what a special, incredible, and resilient people we are. Who else, what other nation in the face of this earth spends the entire morning crying, spends the entire morning reflecting, spends the entire morning contemplating the enormity of losses which are often too profound to truly comprehend, then gathers together in the afternoon to figure out what to do with all of this pain, to figure out what to do with all of this energy, to figure out how to make a future that looks different than our past. So I really want to begin by saying thank you to all of you. Thank you for affording me this opportunity to share with you some words of Torah on this difficult afternoon, because it's this gathering, this incredible gathering, that gives me, and I'm sure many others, the incredible chizuk and incredible strength to continue to build a beautiful future going forward. And with that, we begin. Our shir today is dedicated la'aliyas nishmas Chaim Yishayo Zichrono Livracha Ben Yosef. We hope that in the merit of our Talmud Torah, he together with his mishpacha, the Neshama Shel Aven Aliyah, and the mishpacha Nechama. So let's begin. Number one, I want to share with you an incredible idea by the Maggid of Kuznets. The great Hasidic master of the Kuznets, or Maggid, writes as follows. He says, Hari lefanenu chidush niskav. You know, let me say a word of, by way of introduction. This year is very different. So man nishtana atishabav azem ikal atishabavs. So this one is very different because today is actually not the 9th of Av. Today is already the 10th of Av, and already now we're in midday in the 10th of Av. Historically, what was happening on the 10th of Av, in the beginning of the 10th of Av, the Beis HaMikdash was burning, the Beis HaMikdash was being destroyed. That's why our mourning practice is normally carried into the 10th of Av. But it's incredible to think that this year, it's not the 9th of Av. We observe the fast, we're observing today as our day of tragedy, as our day of reflection, as our day of incredible sadness, but calendrically, it's already the 10th of Av. It's almost the end of the 10th of Av. And when Tisha B'Av falls out on a year like this, there's a different kind of avoda. There's something different that we have to try to accomplish. And the Kuznetzer Maggid captures this essence. He writes, Harei lefanenu chidush niskav. There is an incredible novel idea. Ki ad avodas hatikun v'atshuva eina mascheles v'rosh chodesh elu elu l'macharos Tisha B'Av. The Kuznetzer Maggid says something amazing. He says, you know, the Yomim Noraim, the high holidays, are not too far off. And when do we begin to prepare for the Yomim Noraim? I don't mean you're cooking. I mean spiritually. When do we prepare for the Yomim Noraim? So most of us, it's Elul. Perhaps when we hear the shofar on the first time of Chodesh Elul, as we get into the weeks before Rosh Hashanah, that's when the preparation begins. But the Kuznetzer Maggid says, in fact, that's not true. Preparation for the Yomim Noraim, preparation for Rosh Hashanah, preparation for Aseret Yemei Tshuva, for Yom Kippur, begins on the day after Tisha B'Av. You know, as a Jew, there's no vacation. We're always going from one thing to the next. So Tisha B'Av finishes. What's after Tisha B'Av? Yomim Noraim. The preparation for the high holidays, the preparation for Tshuva, the preparation for the days of judgment, begins on the day after Tisha B'Av, begins on the 10th of Av. It's on this 10th day of Av that it is our obligation to begin to rebuild all that has been destroyed, to begin to reconstruct all that has been deconstructed. And he goes on to explain that, you know, this journey to today didn't begin last night. The journey to today, the journey of Tisha B'Av, began 3 weeks ago. It began on the 17th of Tammuz, whereas the Mishnah Maseches Tainis tells us about the five tragic events that occurred on this day, on the 17th of Tammuz. And chief among them was the breaking of the tablets. Moshe Rabbeinu comes down from Mount Sinai, sees that the people have built a golden calf, cannot bring himself to go ahead and give them the tablets, so he smashes them. That event occurred on the 17th of Tammuz. That is the event that begins the downward spiral. That is the event that begins the line of tragic events. That is the event that begins the heartbreak that marks the 3 weeks. And therefore, says the Kuznetzer Maggid, our job on the 10th of Av, Tisha B'Av is over, we dry our tears, we dust ourselves off, and our job is to begin rebuilding. Our job is to begin rebuilding. For 3 weeks, we have focused on all that has been destroyed. For 3 weeks, we have focused on all that has been dismantled. For 3 weeks, we have focused on all that is tragic, all that is heartbreaking, all that is so profoundly sad. That comes to an end on the 9th of Av. And 10th of Av, we begin to rebuild. So before we explain what this means, it struck me that the Kuznetzer Maggid's words resonate with an incredible profundity, especially this year, because it's the 10th of Av, which means that perhaps this Tisha B'Av, our focus is not just simply mourning, but our focus has to be rebuilding. Our focus has to be reconstruction. Our focus has to be how to put the pieces back together. And that's what I'd like to focus on a little bit this afternoon. Today, calendrically, the 10th of Av is the day we begin rebuilding all that is broken. but how? So I think in order to understand what to rebuild and how to rebuild, we have to go back all the way to the beginning. As I just mentioned before, the first event that begins these 3 weeks of heartbreak is in number 2 on your sheet. The Mishnah Meseches Tainis writes, Chamisha Dvarim Iruas Avosenu B'Shiva Sar B'Tamos. There are 5 events which occurred on the 17th of Tamuz. V'Chamisha B'Tisha B'Av, 5 events which occurred on the 9th of Av. And number 1, B'Shiva Sar B'Tamos Nishtabru Haluchos. On the 17th of Tamuz, as I just mentioned before, Moshe Rabbeinu broke the tablets. He smashed the tablets when he came down from Mount Sinai and saw that the Jews had built the golden calf. Do you ever wonder to yourself, what happened to those tablets? We know the rest of the story. The rest of the story is that Moshe Rabbeinu goes back up the mountain. HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells him, you have to go ahead, the first ones I wrote, the second ones you're going to have to write. The first time I hewed the stones, now you're going to have to hew the stones. But what happened to the tablets? What happened to the first set of tablets that Moshe Rabbeinu smashed? Where did they go? What did he do with them? And so the Gemara tells us in number 3, Luchos v'shivrei luchos munachin ba'aron. The Gemara tells us a dramatic statement. That the whole tablets, the second set of tablets, as well as the first set of broken tablets, were both placed inside the ark. They were both held onto. Incredible. What purpose do the first tablets serve? The second tablets had at least the Ten Commandments, maybe additional mitzvos on them as well. The second tablets were the ones that endured. The second tablets were the ones that Moshe Rabbeinu brought down and presented to Klal Yisrael. The second tablets were the ones for which Bezalel made a Mishkan, which was also included in Aron, an ark, to house the tablets. But the Talmud says that the ark did not only house the whole tablets, it housed the broken ones as well. And the question is obvious. Why? Why hold on to broken tablets? Remember again, the moment that Moshe Rabbeinu threw them down, presumably they lost their sanctity. The moment that Moshe Rabbeinu said that the Jewish people do not deserve it, do not need it, they lost their holiness. Why hold on to the broken first set of tablets? So I want to share with you 2 ideas. The Shlo HaKadosh in number 4 explains, Halev hu neged kodesh HaKadoshim. This is part of a much larger topic, which you're not going to get into today. But the Shlach explains that the heart, you know, every part of the Mishkan, every part of the tabernacle, corresponded to a different part of human anatomy, to a different part of the body. And the Shlach explains that the Kodesh Kadoshim, the Holy of Holies, corresponds to the heart. V'yanuchu ba'atora v'hamitzos neged aluchos. And what's placed inside the heart is the Ark, together with the Torah. Torah is put inside the heart of the Jew. Gamira shiikra levavo. But sometimes the heart is broken. Sometimes the heart is not whole. Sometimes the heart is in pieces. And writes the Shlach HaKadosh, V'hu kimo shivrei luchos shahayu munachos ba'aron. And this dynamic is captured in the broken tablets which were placed inside the ark. Rabbi Nachman of Breslov says this a little bit clearer. If you take a look at number 5, the Rebbe writes, U'kisha ha'lev, Hainu b'chinas vav b'chinas aluchos, Humishuka ba'avus ros, Hainu cherpos u'bezionos ha'nikra arlas dibo, As hu b'chinas shivrei luchos. Rabbi Nachman of Breslov, the Shlach HaKadosh, explained the dynamic in the same way. The tablets, the luchos, represent the heart of the Jew. And there are 2 sets of luchos. There are 2 sets of tablets which reside in the ark. There are the whole tablets, the intact tablets, which represent the heart when it's complete, the heart when it's shalem. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells us to keep the shivrei luchos, the broken tablets as well. Because the broken tablets represent the broken heart of the Jew. The broken tablets represent the broken heart of shattered dreams. And each of us walks around through life with these 2 sets of tablets. the whole tablets, which represent the things that are wonderful, things that are going beautifully, things that are going according to plan, and the broken tablets, which are the tablets of our shattered dreams, our shattered aspirations, our shattered wants and desires. And in life, there are different types of shattered dreams. Rabbi Yisrael Meir Lau was the former chief rabbi of Israel, now the chief rabbi of Tel Aviv, has a biography titled Out of the Depths. And if you haven't read it, it's an exceptionally profound piece of literature that I think is required reading for every Jew. And Rabbi Lau, in the beginning of his book, describes when his family was rounded up in their town, Petrikov. And I want to read to you his account of what happened on that day. Mother had equipped me with a large down pillow on which she had sewn two straps. Because of my small size, this pillow would serve as a blanket that could cover almost my entire body. It was intended to save me from freezing to death. Lulik, that's what his mother called him, Lulik. Wherever you go, this will be your satchel, my mother said, hiding some food and clothing inside. Mother and I stood on a train platform, which was crowded with terrified Jews and shouting Germans. Before us was a freight car with a tiny hatch at the top covered with barbed wire and sliding doors that bolted shut. The Germans opened these doors in order to pack the people inside. Following their usual organized procedure, they directed men to one group of cars and women and children to another group of cars. The clubs, the whistles, the dogs helped them carry out the operation. Within a few short seconds, my mother realized what this separation meant. In another moment, I would be entering the car with her. So she made an instantaneous decision. With a pillow on my shoulders separating us, she grasped my back with both hands and shoved me in the direction of the men. I didn't understand what was going on. I only heard her say, Tulik, it's Rabbi Lau's older brother, take care of Lulik. Goodbye, Tulik. Goodbye, Lulik. And I never saw her again. Her maternal instinct was honed to its sharpest in those few seconds. She understood that women and children had less of a chance to survive. My guess is that she made the quick calculation based on her experiences of the war. At that point, the war had been going on for 5 years. She must have understood that with the Russians about to invade, Germans would need working hands for their war machines, and thus they would exploit us until our last breaths. She must have felt that it would be for my own good to go with Naftali, his older brother, rather than with her. And so she pushed me towards him. We did not have time for a conversation or consultation, much less for saying goodbye. Naftali caught me as she threw me to him. He grabbed me with both hands and shouted in mother's direction, what do I do? She just waved her hand at us and the Germans shoved her towards the car with the other woman. The moment was intensely traumatic for me. The Germans forced Naftali and me into the men's car, and seconds later the doors locked behind us. I clearly recall Naftali beating on the closing door with his fists and shouting in Polish, there's been a mistake. There's a child in here. You must take him back to his mother. But no one listened. No one heard his plea. I screamed in terror and transferred all my rage at the separation to Naftali, my brother. In retrospect, this was clearly the hardest moment I experienced in the 6 years of the war. Never before and never since did I cry as I did on that day of my separation from my mother. To separate from your mother is inconceivable. It hurts your whole being all the years of your life. It took me a long time to understand that when mother pushed me towards Naftali, she saved my life. Mother went her way, and we ours. We thought her way led to Bergen-Belsen. Only when the war ended did we learn that on the day mother was taken to Ravensbrück concentration camp, where she was murdered. Naftali and I got off the train at a labor camp in the Polish town of Szczeszowa. See, there are shattered dreams of what was. A little boy who wanted what all little boys want, all little children want, the attention and the loving embrace of a parent. Rabbi Lau's father was already gone, and all he wanted was the love, the nurturing, and the warmth of his beloved mother. And so sometimes our luchos are broken into pieces when we realize that we will never again be able to have what was. What existed in my past will never be replicated again. And then there's a different type of shattered dreams. There's the shattered dreams of what could have been. There's an incredible medrash on the pasuk in Tehillim. A pasuk that many of us are familiar with. Some have the custom to recite this every day before benching. This is in chapter 137 of Psalms. Al Naros Bavel. Sham Yashavnu Gambachinu Bezachrinu Esiyom. Number 6 on your sheet. We sat by the rivers of Babylon. There we sat and we wept when we remembered Zion. And the Medrash tells an amazing story. The Medrash relates that when God destroyed the temple, when God destroyed the Beis HaMikdash, He would not tell the patriarchs, the matriarchs, Moshe, Joshua. He wouldn't tell any of them. Why? Because He was concerned that if any of them would find out about His plan, they would try to convince Him not to destroy the Beis HaMikdash, not to destroy the temple. So He tells no one. But as the temple is engulfed in flames and as our ancestors are being led out of the land of Israel, the prophet Jeremiah, the prophet of destruction, can't hold it in anymore. So he goes to Moshe. And Moshe says, Yirmiyahu, Jeremiah, what are you doing here? And Yirmiyahu can't bring himself to tell Moshe what has happened. He said, Moshe, don't you hear? Don't you hear their cries? Don't you hear what's happening? Moshe says, no, what's happened? And Yirmiyahu HaNavi tells him, HaKadosh Baruch Hu has destroyed the Beis HaMikdash. And the Jews are being led out from the land. And Moshe Rabbeinu says to Yirmiyahu HaNavi, take me to see them. I want to see my people. And the prophet Jeremiah says, I can't. Because the road is littered with corpses. And there is no way to walk. Moshe Rabbeinu says, just take me. And if you could imagine the scene, the Navi Yirmiyahu leads Moshe Rabbeinu down the corpse-strewn path outside the land of Israel towards Bavel, towards Babylon. And I want to read to you the Medrash. Ad shehigiyu l'naros Bavel. Yirmiyahu, the prophet Jeremiah, this is in number 7, second line. Till they reached the rivers of Bavel. And Moshe Rabbeinu was there with Yirmiyahu. Ra'u l'Moshe. Our ancestors saw Moshe Rabbeinu. Ve'amru ze lo ze ba ben amro mikivro lifdosinu miyad sarenu. And an excited chatter begins to develop. Moshe has come back from the grave. And if Moshe Rabbeinu has come back from the grave, it's for one reason and one reason only. Moshe Rabbeinu is the divine emissary of salvation. Moshe Rabbeinu is the one who delivers us from trouble. Moshe Rabbeinu is the one who took us out of Egypt. Moshe Rabbeinu is the one who stared down every single one of our enemies. Moshe Rabbeinu brought us to the border of Eretz Yisrael. So if Moshe Rabbeinu is here, it must be that He has come to bring us back home. There's been a change of plans. We're going to go back to Eretz Yisrael. Miyad. A divine voice comes out from the heavens and says, no, this is my decree. You will not go home today. And you will not go home tomorrow. The journey is away from the land. Not back into the land. Miyad Amar Lehem Moshe. Moshe Rabbeinu says to Klal Yisrael, Bonai. V'hachzir eschem I efshar. My beautiful children, I cannot bring you home. Shekvar nigzira gezera, for there is a divine decree. Ela hamokom yachzir eschem b'mehera. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu should bring you home speedily in our days. V'yaniach osam. Moshe left them and returned back to his burial place. At that moment, the collective nation began to cry, until their cries ascended all the way to the heavens. And that's the meaning of the verse, Al Naharos Bavel, Sham Yashavnu Gam Bachinu. It was by the rivers of Bavel when we caught that glimpse of Moshe Rabbeinu. And we thought that we were about to be redeemed. But then Moshe Rabbeinu told us that he can't help us. We began to cry again. That's the shattered dreams of what could have been. Moshe Rabbeinu could have taken us back. We could have started again. There could have been a second chance, a third chance, and a fourth chance. But it was not to be. So you see, there are many different types of broken tablets. There are many different types of shattered dreams in life. There are the shattered dreams of what was and can no longer be had again. And then there are the shattered dreams of what could have been, but never materialized. And sometimes in life, when we see our dreams shattered before our eyes, that experience is so overwhelming. Sometimes when we see our luchos smashed right in front of us, and we see that the life we thought we had will be no more, or the life we thought we could have will not materialize, it can become such an overwhelming experience that it paralyzes us into inaction. The first example we have of this is already in the beginning of humanity. If you look at number 8, there's a dramatic medrash. The medrash writes that after the first act of bloodshed, after brother turned against brother, after Cain killed Hevel. So the medrash relates that Adam and Chava are there with the corpse of their young child. Hakelev shayim mishamer tzono shel Hevel. Hayim mishamer nivlosu mikol chayas hasodeh umikol of hashamayim. Hevel is dead. His body is on the ground. And his trusted dog kept circling his body to keep away the animals of prey from desecrating his corpse. V'haya Adam v'ozro yoshim ubochim umisavlim alav. And Adam and Chava are sitting there by the lifeless body of their child. And they don't know what to do. Because Hevel represented for them their future. Because Hevel was their luchos. Because Hevel represented their dreams and aspirations for a beautiful future. Because Hevel represented their continuity. Because Hevel represented a piece of their eternality. Because that beautiful child was an extension of themselves. And now the luchos were smashed. And now the dreams have been shattered. And now life as we know it has come to a grinding halt. And it will never be the same. And Adam and Chava are paralyzed. They don't know what to do. They're sitting there by the body of Hevel, not knowing what do we do now. What's the next step? How do we move on? And the Medrash says something amazing. O Rav Echad Shemesre Ehu, Amar Elmod La'adam Ma'la'asos. There was a raven whose spouse had just passed away. And the raven said, I'll show Adam and Chava what to do. Ma'asa Nato Re'ehu V'chafar Ba'aretz Etamnu Le'ne'em V'kavru. The raven took its spouse, dug up some earth, put a lifeless body in the earth and covered it with dirt. Adam and Chava saw this and they then understood what they had to do as well. Sometimes when the luchos, when the dreams and aspirations of our lives are shattered right in front of us, sometimes in that moment when I realize that the life that I thought I had I will no longer have. Or sometimes when I realize that the life I wanted to have will no longer materialize for me, I am brought to a grinding halt. And sometimes the breaking and shattering of the luchos is so overwhelming and so deafening that I am paralyzed into inaction. And as such, says Rabbi Nachman of Breslov, HaKadosh Baruch Hu commanded Moshe Rabbeinu, when he came down with the second set of tablets, to place both of them in the ark. The whole tablets, the broken tablets, because only both of them together create the full continuum of the human condition. There are things in life that go right. There are things in life that go according to plan. There are things in life that unfold exactly as we want them to. Those are the whole tablets. But then for many of us, I'd venture to say all of us, there are always broken, shattered tablets. The tablets of life circumstances that I never anticipated, that I never thought. The shattered tablets of life dreams and aspirations that will never and can never materialize. But there's something intriguing. The Talmud tells us that the broken tablets were put in the ark. But the actual text of the Torah never makes reference to it. In fact, the only reference that we have to the broken tablets being placed in the ark is in the pasuk at the end of Shmos, where the Torah says, this is in number 9 on your sheet, Vayikach vayiten asa'edos ala aron. Speaking about the Moshe Rabbeinu when they're constructing the tabernacle, constructing the Mishkan, and Moshe Rabbeinu puts the luchos, he puts the tablets inside the ark. And so if you look at number 10, the commentary Targum Yonasan ben Uziel, one of the earliest commentaries on the Torah, slides in an interesting statement. In number 10, second line, he says, Hinun luchi sadusa vitavri lucha ba'arona. He'll take my word for the translation on the Aramaic. Targum Yonasan says that Moshe Rabbeinu put the intact tablets and the broken tablets inside the ark. And another obvious question. If the broken tablets are so important and they occupy a place in the ark, why is it not mentioned explicitly in the text? The Talmud tells us about it. The commentaries on the Talmud tell us about it. Commentaries on the Torah tell us about it. But why isn't there a verse that tells me that Moshe Rabbeinu took the broken tablets and he placed them in the ark? Why is that piece of information left out? And if you take a look at number 13, the Ibn Ezra says something absolutely amazing. He says in number 13, Psalachosh Neluchos Avarim Karishonim B'minu Mida Vayomer Agon. The Ibn Ezra says, he quotes his teacher, Ki Ashnayim Nichbadim Meharishonim. Do you know why the first tablets are not mentioned? Because the second tablets were even better than the first. The second tablets were even better than the first. So once you have the second tablets in there, there's no need to speak about the first tablets. But you know, it's not true. The second tablets weren't better than the first. If you look at number 11, the Gemara Maseches Eruvin writes, El Molei Lo Nishtabru Luchos HaRishonos Lo Nishtachacha Torah MiYisrael. If the first set of tablets were never smashed, we would never forget. Torah would never be forgotten from the Jewish people. Rav Acher Bar Yaakov says, Ein kol umma v'loshon shuletes b'hen. If the first set of tablets were never smashed, no other nation would ever be able to overcome us or to defeat us. In number 12, the Medrash says that the first set of tablets were written by God, and the second set of tablets are written by Moshe. Said Ibn Ezra, you'll excuse me. What do you mean the second set of tablets were better than the first? It's simply a false statement. The second set of tablets are great. It's beautiful. It's wonderful. But to say they were greater than the first, they weren't even equal to the first. The first set of tablets were the primary relationship document between us and God. The first set of tablets was HaKadosh Baruch Hu's first gift to us as a nation. The first set of tablets were crafted by God Himself and given to us as a beautiful token of His love. How can you say the second tablets are as great as the first? And the Ibn Ezra teaches us an incredible lesson. that life is not about objective comparisons. Life is about maximizing what you have. The second tablets are better. You know why the second tablets are better? Because it's what you've got. As the famous statement goes, if you can't be with the one you love, love the one you're with. Those of you who are laughing, okay, you need to do a lot of tshuva on that. At the end of the day, the Ibn Ezra says, are the first tablets greater? Absolutely they're greater. But you don't have them. They're gone. They're smashed. All we have are the intact second tablets. And so if that's what you have, then by definition, that is the best. If this is my current situation, I have a choice. I could spend my life, an entire lifetime, measuring my current circumstances against what was or what could have been or what should have been. And it's quite possible that when I measure what I have against what could have, did have, or might have occurred, that what I've got right now is inferior. But the Ibn Ezra says that's not the way life works. You maximize the tablets you have. Even if objectively they're not as beautiful, they're not as holy, or they're not as wonderful as the tablets you once had or the tablets you could have had. Life is not about objective comparisons. Life is about maximizing the experiences and the situation that you have in front of you at the moment. The Baal Shem Tov HaKadosh says that on the pasuk in Tehillim, a pasuk that resonates with so much meaning. This is in chapter 71, verse 9, number 14 on your sheet. Al tashlicheni le'es zikna, kichlos kovhi al ta'azvin. David HaMelech writes in Psalms, God, do not cast me away at the time of old age. When my strength fails, do not forsake me. And on the most basic level, the truth is this verse doesn't actually require all that much explanation. We understand it. David HaMelech says, Ribono Shel Olam, as I get old and I become a bit more helpless, don't forget about me. But the Baal Shem Tov says it means something different. Al tashlicheni le'es zikna, he says, es zikna means the past. Al tashlicheni le'es zikna means don't let me live in the past. Don't let me be the kind of person who is always living in the good old days. Don't let me be the kind of person who is always focusing on that beautiful life that I once had, but is no longer. Don't let me be that kind of person who fails to launch, who fails to maximize the present, because I'm so focused on lamenting all of the things that did not go the way they should, that did not materialize the way I had planned. Don't be one of those people who spends an entire lifetime complaining about what should have and could have been. Atashlicheni le'ezikna ribono shel olam, please. I need your help. I need your assistance. Because I don't want to live in the past. I want to maximize my present. I can't spend my life thinking about the luchos rishonos. I can't spend my life thinking about the first set of tablets. They were so beautiful. They were so wonderful. They were filled with so much promise, so much potential. But they are no longer. And so, the second set of tablets become the best tablets we could possibly have for one simple reason. Because it's what we've got. And life is all about maximizing the circumstances you have. And not spending your energy lamenting what you don't. The Torah doesn't even make mention of the Luchos Rishonos, the first set of tablets, because there's absolutely no point. Yet the amazing part is, they are still kept in the Ark. It's amazing, right? See, we're talking about maximizing the tablets we have. So I would say, put out the old tablets with recycling. I don't need it anymore. But yet they're still kept in the Ark. Why? Because those first set of tablets, which represents the shattered dreams and lost opportunities of existence, you have to keep them with you. Because when you keep the shattered tablets of lost dreams and lost opportunities, it sensitizes you to take advantage of the opportunities which do present themselves. Because all too often in life, God puts incredible opportunities right in front of us. And we usually just say, I'm too busy. We usually just say, it's not the right time. There'll be other opportunities. There'll be other moments. And the truth is, very often in life we know that's not true. So the second set of tablets are the best tablets. Your present circumstances are the best circumstances you could possibly want. Maybe objectively they're not, but it's what you've got, so it's the best. But we keep the broken set of tablets with us to sensitize ourselves to the pain of shattered dreams, the pain of lost opportunities, so as to awaken within ourselves a greater sensitivity and a greater strength to seize the life opportunities, to seize the dreams as they come our way. And so today is the 10th of Av. And today is the day when we have to begin rebuilding. We've spent the last 3 weeks mourning. And now is the time where I'm not content with mourning. I don't want to spend my life crying. I need to rebuild. So how do we rebuild? And lesson number one for today is we rebuild by focusing on the second set of life tablets. Stop spending time and emotional energy lamenting all that has gone wrong, lamenting all that is not fair, lamenting all the wrongs that life, that God, that other people have visited upon you. Pick up your second set of tablets because they're magnificent, they're wonderful, they're beautiful, and they're what you have. We begin the process of rebuilding by stopping to focus on the shattered dreams and lost opportunities of the past and figure out a way to maximize the magnificent set of second tablets we have now. I'll give you a story which I think illustrates this idea so beautifully. I recently saw an interview a few weeks ago with a man by the name of Shia Gross. Shia Gross was 6 years old, an Israeli gentleman, 42 years ago, and he was on the Air France flight that was hijacked by the PLO terrorists and forced to land in Entebbe, Uganda. And so he was discussing that every year, actually Parshas Chukas, is all the people who were there, who survived this terrible ordeal, get together, and they have a Shabbat Entebbe. They get together, and they tell the stories, and he says as time goes on, there are less people there. Gilad Shalit actually joined them for the last 2 years. And so the Shia Gross is on Israeli television, and he's being interviewed by this woman, by the singer. She's asking about, tell me about the Shabbat. And then she asks him an amazing question. She says, Shia, you were 6 years old during that terrible time in Entebbe. Do you remember anything? And he said, a lot of the details are fuzzy. But he said, there's one thing that I do remember. He said, it was Friday, Erev Shabbos. And he said, my mother took me by the hand. And he said, Ima, mother, where are we going? And she said, Tzrichim lahadlik neirot Shabbat. We have to go light Shabbos candles. The sun's going down. Time to light Shabbos candles. They went over to the window, mother and son. And the mother began to sob. Afterwards, she looked up. She showed her son two stars in the sky. And she said the bracha of Lahadlik Ner Shel Shabbat. And she turned to her son and she said, my dear child, in the future we will have more light. But for now we will make the bracha on the light we have. Shia Gross said to me, that was the greatest lesson my mother ever taught me. And it didn't take place in our home. It didn't take place in our land. It took place under the watchful eye of terrorist captors in Entebbe, Uganda. That sometimes you have to make the bracha on the light you have. Even though it's not the luminescent light you want. Even though it's not the radiant light you deserve. And even though it's not the bright light that you thought and you imagined your life would be blessed with. There'll be more light in the future, God willing, for each of us. But sometimes you have to find the strength to make the bracha on the light you have. Sometimes our lives are not as bright as we would like. You can focus on the dimness, or you can maximize the light that you have. So many of us go through life weighed down by the broken tablets. And some of us have some significant broken tablets. And I would venture to say there are some of us here that have multiple sets of broken tablets. And those tablets are heavy. Those tablets weigh you down. And I would urge us to consider the following. You know, when you go into the airport and you want to take flight, you want to travel somewhere. So we all know, and especially this seems to be a new trend amongst airlines. They tell you, you know what? That's not a carry-on bag, ma'am, sir. Right? Especially Jews run into this problem all of the time. You know, you can see the difference between a Jewish carry-on and a non-Jewish carry-on. And what do they say? It's too heavy. So what do you have to do with it? You have to check it. Because sometimes you can't move on to the next destination in life unless you're ready to check your baggage. Because if you try to bring everything with you on the flight to the next destination of accomplishment, there's no room in the overhead bin. And you're not allowed to keep the luggage by your feet. And so, you know what happens when you're on the flight with that person who tried to bring all of their luggage on the flight? No one takes off. And everyone sits on the tarmac. We all have our broken tablets, all of us. Because if there's one thing that unites every single person here in this room, life has not gone according to plan. There have been many twists and turns, for some of us a few, for others of us many, each and every day. And we carry around our broken tablets, and those broken tablets obscure our ability to see the beautiful second set of tablets that we have in front of us. Tablets that may not be perfect, and tablets that may not be as beautiful as the first set of tablets we had once upon a time ago, but it's the tablets we have. And so today on Tisha B'Av, today on the 10th of Av, when we begin our process of rebuilding, the first step is let go of your broken tablets. Check your baggage. Don't throw out your baggage. You have to hold on to it. Our baggage is very important because the baggage of the past informs and shapes the way we live in the future and can be very profound and very cathartic. Don't throw it out. Just don't carry it on your shoulders each and every day. Let go of the first set of broken tablets and find the courage to maximize the second tablets. Find the courage to maximize the life that you have and stop thinking about the life that could have been. That's lesson number one. One second lesson, and with this I'll end. If you look at number 15, there's an amazing Gemara Maseches Brachos. The Gemara talking about the broken tablets sees in this an incredible metaphor. V'izaru b'zakin sheshachach tamudo machmas anso. The Gemara says, be very careful with a Torah scholar who has forgotten his learning. Forgotten his learning, whatever the Gemara is describing, dementia, Alzheimer's. Be careful with someone who once had a lot of Torah knowledge, but then forgot it. Why? Daminon, luchos, v'shivrei luchos, munachin ba'aron. For the Talmud tells us that the whole tablets and the broken tablets are both inside of the ark. In other words, what the Gemara is saying is, the whole tablets are a reference to intact people. People who have it together. And the broken tablets are the people whose lives are in disarray. They're broken. And so the Gemara tells us, be careful with the broken people, just like you are careful with the whole people. Be careful with the broken luchos, just as you are careful with the intact luchos. For they both have a place in the ark. In the great tzaddik, Reb Tzaddik HaKohen of Lublin, in number 16, writes, Ki be'emes, gam shivrei luchos munachin ba'aron. Because, writes Reb Tzaddik, in reality, the broken tablets are inside the ark as well. He says, Rak, if you skip a little bit, he says, Shav shneihem shavin b'kdushasan. Because the holiness of the complete tablets is the equivalent of the holiness of the broken tablets. They are both just as holy. Rak shemitzad ha-nigla zenishbar v'zeh shalem. It's just externally they look different. One looks whole, one looks broken, but they contain the same level of sanctity. Avamakomam shava mamish ba'aron. But they have the same place in the ark. You see, the shivrei luchos, the broken tablets, are the broken people all around us. There's an amazing story about a young man named Leon Saplinsky. I'm going to read to you this story. Leon Saplinsky was 12 years old when he was separated from his parents and put on the cattle car headed to Auschwitz. As he sat in the oppressive boxcar, all he could think about was his mother's last words to him. Take care of your brother. He looked down at his little brother, Jan, who was 4 years old. Leon pulled him close and embraced him, but in his mind he wondered how he would be able to protect his 4-year-old brother from the horrific realities that were all around them. How would he fulfill his promise to his mother? The train had been traveling for hours. Stifling stench, lack of air, and hunger pains began to plague the people on board. But the greatest challenge was thirst. Leon looked down, saw Jan's parched lips, and realized he had to do something. He noticed that snow had begun to accumulate on the small barred window of the cattle car. He lifted himself up, tried to reach through the window, but it was too narrow. He looked down at his brother and he knew what he had to do. He maneuvered and pushed his hand until his hand, now all bloody, pushed through the small opening. He collected a fistful of snow, pulled his hand back into the train. It had cost him a layer of skin, but it was worth it. Jan stared at the priceless treasure, and Leon knew that he had not let his mother down. At that instant, Leon became acutely aware of a young mother holding her infant nearby. The starving baby had been crying continuously for the last number of hours. Leon had been too focused on his brother and had not paid that much attention to the others. The young mother's eyes craved the droplets of water trickling from Leon's hands. Tearfully, Leon stretched out his hand and offered the snow to the young woman. She immediately placed the droplets inside the baby's parched lips and soothed the infant for the first time in hours. Leon sat down next to his brother. He held his brother close as he tearfully apologized for not giving him the drink he so desperately needed. Hiding his own tears of disappointment, Jan squeezed his brother tightly, buried his head against his older brother, and bravely responded, "It's all right, Leon. I wasn't thirsty anyway." And as the brothers wept upon one another, Leon knew that his mother would be proud of her children. You see, there are broken tablets all around us. There are people who suffer. There are people who have difficulties. There are people who have challenges. And so often we become so absorbed in our own stuff, and sometimes it's legitimate stuff, that we forget about the broken tablets all around us. You come to shul on Shabbos, and you know when you go to the Kiddush, there's always that person who's standing by the periphery. Do you know what it's like in life to stand on the periphery? Do you know what it's like in life to be the person on the outside of the circle looking in while everyone else is so happy and everyone else is celebrating? their friendships. Do you know what it's like to be the widow after shul, when everyone clears out of the women's section to greet their husbands, and you can't? Do you know what it means to be the childless couple? To see all of your friends moving on with their lives, and yet the one bracha that you want so much is the one you can't have. There are broken tablets all around us. And what about the elderly person who, for whatever reason, doesn't have family members who check in on him and her, and who could go weeks and weeks and weeks without a phone call, without a visit, without a hello? And there are so many other examples that we can keep giving, broken tablet after broken tablet after broken tablet. And so often in life, those of us who, Baruch Hashem, are whole tablets, we just go on. We just keep moving. We just keep doing our things, absorbed in our tablets, in our arcs, and in our lives. And how much we could learn from a 12-year-old boy and his 4-year-old brother about what it means to be attentive to the broken tablets all around us. And it requires so little. All it requires is an opening of your eyes and an opening of your heart. Your friends do not need your invitations to your Shabbos tables. Your friends already know that you like them. That's why they're your friends. Your friends know they're going to get invited to your simchas. But imagine if you opened up your Shabbos table to those who you know aren't getting invited elsewhere. Imagine if you opened up your home to those who are not part of the in crowd, who are not part of your chevra, who are not part of the people who look like or dress like or even believe like everyone else. Imagine for a moment that so many of us here who daven in Orthodox shuls, when you see someone who comes in, who maybe doesn't fit, doesn't look like everyone else, is looking for a yarmulke, is looking for a tallis, is looking for a doily, don't watch from a distance. Go over and say, I'm so happy you're here. Thank you for coming. I don't know you. You don't know me. But Baruch Hashem, we're all together part of one nation. We get so wrapped up in our own whole tablets that we forget to see the broken tablets of need all around us. There are broken tablets wherever you look. You know what those broken tablets want? All they want is a place in your ark. All they want is a place in your life. All they want is a place in your heart. We're all looking for ways to grow. And I would suggest that we stop focusing on what we can do for ourselves and start focusing on what we can do for the other. Because there's a very well hidden secret, which is the best formula for personal growth is giving to the other. The more you do for your fellow, the greater you become. When you do a chesed for someone else, I will tell you, that is more powerful than saying Sefer Tehillim every single day. Now again, it's not an either or, you should do both. But sometimes when we think about growth, we think about what I need to do to build myself up. And we do, they have to be two concurrent tracks. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu put us in a world where there are so many broken tablets. And why? Why? Because it gives those of us who are whole the opportunity to move our tablets over just a little bit and recognize that there's so much room in the ark of our lives for others who may be in a state of disrepair, for others who may have encountered challenge, for others who may be having a difficult time. And so on this day of Tisha B'Av, we've mourned, we've cried, we have felt the pain of all that has been lost, and now is the time to rebuild. And we rebuild by taking the shattered luchos, by taking the shattered tablets. We rebuild, number one, by letting go of the broken tablets of shattered dreams and lost opportunities, and finding the strength to embrace the second tablets we have been given. We rebuild through becoming more attentive to the broken tablets all around us, and by providing them a place in our beautiful, welcoming ark. And I'll end with one last piece. There's a medrash. I don't know if I quoted it last year, but I definitely quoted it in previous years. Because to me, it's one of the most moving midrashim, centering around the concept of redemption of Mashiach. And the medrash reads as follows. It's number 17 on your sheet. B'shash ha-melech ha-mashiach bo, when the Messiah comes, Omeid al-gag beis ha-mikdash, he will stand on the rooftop of the rebuilt third temple. Va'omer, and he cries out to us and he says, Anovim, humble ones, higia ziman geulaschem, the time of your redemption has come. Vim einatem maminim, and if you don't believe me, re'u ba'ori shezarach aleichem, see the beautiful light that is emanating upon you. And this medrash always intrigued me for a variety of reasons. You know, we often think that when Mashiach comes, you know, you read this medrash and it sounds like Mashiach's going to have to sell us on the fact, guys, it's me, the Messianic King, I'm here, hello, anyone here? Is this on? Right? When Mashiach comes, we often assume that, of course, Mashiach, everybody's going to recognize it. Everyone's going to know it. But yet here it sounds like the third base HaMikdash is here. The Mashiach is standing on top and he's saying, Hi, Klal Yisrael, and Anovim, humble ones, it's me. Higia zman geulaschem, the time of geula is here. If you don't believe me, Re'u ba'ori shezoreach, see the beautiful light. And he's quoting the pasuk from Yeshaya, number 18, Kumi ori ki va'orech, arise, shine, for your light has come. The light that Mashiach is referring to is not the light of him, it's not Mashiach's light. It's our light. Mashiach says, don't you see your own light? I'm refracting, I'm reflecting your light. What Mashiach at the Medrash is telling us is something amazing. Mashiach is here. The Geula is here. We just have to work a little bit harder to be able to see it. The third Beis HaMikdash is ready to come down. Mashiach is already standing on top of it. And Mashiach is already telling us, Anovim, Anovim, Higia Zman Geulaschem. And you know why he calls us humble? Because I'm going to share with you something, and we all think it. It's Tisha B'Av. It's incredible. We want Mashiach, Geula. And my dear friends, how long does it last for? I know this is a pious group. But other people, you ask your friends how long it lasts for. Usually by the second bite of the bagel tonight. Right back to life as usual. Right? It's Monday morning tomorrow, back to work, got a lot of stuff to do. Kids are off to camp, coming back from camp, here, there, vacation. Yeah, today, for the next 3 hours, I want Mashiach. But pretty much after that, I'll go back to business as usual. Maybe it'll awaken within me next Shiva Servetamus. Because we don't understand our own power. Because we don't understand that it doesn't have to be this way. It doesn't have to continue this way. I know it's been this way for 2,000 years. I know. And that's not a good track record when you're trying to chart future performance. 2,000 years one way, suddenly, but it could change. That's what the Medrash is saying. Stop being so humble. Stop resigning yourself to the reality that is. Stop assuming that just because it's been a certain way for 2,000 years, that it has to be that way for some indefinite amount of time going forward. We control the future. We control the fabric of Klal Yisrael. We control the fabric of our world. If we want it to change, and we open our hearts, and we open our minds, and we roll up our sleeves, and we get to work, we don't have to sit on the floor on Tisha B'Av. We don't have to continue to mourn. We don't have to find ourselves in a constant deepening abyss of loss, of tragedy, of trials and tribulations. We can change it. Anovim, Anovim, Higia Zman Geulaschem is the messianic cry that we hear. If you open your heart and you open your ears, you could hear it today. Mashiach is telling us, stop being so humble. Stop thinking that you're only one person. Stop thinking that you can't make a difference, because it's not true. It's unequivocally and patently false. We have this inappropriate humility that we can't change the world. But we can. We can rebuild. We can make a difference. We could change the tragic fabric of this day into a day of simcha. And all it requires of us is to, on one hand, let go of the broken luchos of our past, and on the other hand, make room in our ark for the broken tablets all around us. I truly hope that we should be privileged in Yiratz Hashem to learn together next year. But I hope that our shir will not be here. I hope that in Yiratz Hashem, over the course of the coming days, or if not days, then weeks, and if not weeks, then months, that in Yiratz Hashem HaKadosh Baruch Hu will finally see fit to end our diaspora, to end this long and dark 2,000-year night, to usher in a period of luminescent messianic brightness, to usher in a period of unparalleled simcha. May we be privileged, in Yiratz Hashem, to celebrate our next Tisha B'Av and all of our remaining days with the Beis HaMikdash, with the rebuilt Yerushalayim, with the Melech HaMashiach, Meir Rabbi Amenu. Amen.